Thought we would study about heaven. Someone called me this afternoon and was telling me how bad a day he was having. He could just hardly go. And he didn't make it this evening, but everybody else is having a hard day too, so we'll just look at some of these texts here. Let's start tonight with Luke chapter 15 and verse 7 and 10. Luke chapter 15 and verses 7 and 10. It says, Jesus' words, I say unto you, that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. Verse 10 says, likewise I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. So those verses tell us that there's joy in heaven. There's joy when sinners repent, but it tells us that there is joy there in heaven. The next text is Luke chapter 16 in verses 19 through 25. Luke chapter 16 and verses 19 through 25. It says, I'm going to read all those. There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen, fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate, full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died, and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And in hell he lifted up his eyes, being in torments, and seeing Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime received thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. So that was a lot of reading to get to it, but it says there will be comfort for us in heaven. Peace and comfort.
My brother-in-law used that. He said they believe that they're, as soon as they pass away, they go straight to heaven. And that's one of the deals he used. And I could explain that. I said that was a parable.
It is a parable. It's a parable for lots of reasons. Abraham's bosom isn't where we're going when we die. That says he was carried to Abraham's bosom. We know that people in the lake of fire at the end aren't going to talk to people in heaven either. And what good would it do you to have somebody bring a drop of water over and put it on your tongue if you were sizzling in a vat of grease? It's the story, you know, it's kind of an allegory, but some of them do try to get a lot of usage out of that.
Could you explain what is a parable? It's just a story, right?
It's just a story that people make up to get something out of it. And basically Jesus was talking to the rich here and making them think about the fact that if they're enjoying their riches and all these things and they're not helping taking care of the other people, that in the end they'll be judged badly for it, and the other people, the poor people, will enjoy the kingdom of heaven. That's really what he was saying. He was drawing a moral out of the story for them. And he was also telling them, if you read on down to verses 29 and 30, supposedly the man said to him, I have five brothers, go tell them so they don't come here. And Jesus said, you know, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he told them that even if someone rose from the dead, they still probably wouldn't listen. You know, so he was telling them, in verse 31 it says, he said unto them, if they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded though one rose from the dead. So as he was telling them, do good here, treat the poor right, and listen to the law and the prophets. In other words, read your Bible and do what it says. Okay, our next one is Revelation 14:13. Revelation 14:13 says, and I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them. So that's telling us there's going to be rest. That verse is probably not the perfect verse to use for that. It's actually talking about something a little different. I don't know why they have it. That's what they put under it. That's what they use to demonstrate rest. I'm just going through the Strong's Concordance. They have a whole topic here on what's going to happen in heaven. And some of these are some strange texts. Okay. Matthew 5, 11 and 12. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you. That means curse you or really tearing to you. And persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. In other words, hate you because you're a Christian. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. So it says if we endure a lot here, that's going to bless us. Reward in heaven. Okay. Let's see. How about 1 Peter 1:4? Start in verse 3. It says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and it fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. Says we have an inheritance in heaven that's kept for us. Let's see. Second Peter 3:13, while we're right there. Says, nevertheless, we according to his promise look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. persecuting others, giving other people a hard time, and it just isn't going to be there. They want to act like that, God's got a place for them, but it's not in there. Okay. This service, Revelation 7:15. I'm not sure what that is. So we'll go read Revelation 7:15. Revelation 7:15. It says, therefore are they before the throne of God, and serve him day and night in his temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. So in heaven it says we're going to serve God day and night. It's talking about the people that come through the great tribulation. Verse 14 we should have read says, I said unto him, Sir, thou knowest. And he was asking who these people were. And he said, these are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore are they before the throne of God, and serve him day and night in his temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell amongst them. So the greatest honor at the end is if you get to dwell right next to God. Even if I'm the guy that has the last farm on the far side of the new earth, I'll be happy to be there. But the people who have the greatest joy are those that get to stay right next to God. Just like today, people, you see the president, and they all want to get as close to him as they can. Maybe they can touch him or something. Heaven, people want to be next to God. Okay. It's described as a kingdom in Matthew 25:34. Hoping they get to the good texts, because back in Isaiah it tells us that we're going to plant our own grapes and eat our own grapes and things, and we're just going to build our own house. It says no one else will ever live in our house. In other words, you never sell your house in heaven. When you have a home there, it's yours forever. Let's see, what did I say that was? Matthew 25:34. Says, and then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So if we're found righteous at the end and we're not thrown away with the goats, the people didn't do what's right, we'll hear him say those words, Come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Tried to think of that, and you really can't picture it too well, you know? If you're inside the holy city when God burns up the earth, you see it all done, and finally the last ember of Satan goes out. It's all done. And then God has him roll open the gates on the holy city. And then I can see him going down there and saying, Let there be grass. And the whole earth will just be enveloped in beautiful grass. Let there be flowers. Let there be water. Let there be a cardinal and a robin and a sparrow and some chickies.
Does it don't say that, does it? I've never read that.
Well, it says God's going to recreate the new earth. So he created it once, and he did it in 7 days, and it tells us what he did. He put all these things here. So if God's going to make the new heavens and new earth, obviously once he burns up everything and the lake of fire goes out, he's going to recreate the earth. So if you and I are there with him, we will get to see it. It says in the book of Job that when he created it the first time, the sons of God shouted for joy. The angels got to watch it the first time. Can you imagine? I've thought about that, you know. Can you imagine seeing God make a...
I've never read that.
Can you ever imagine seeing God make the sparrow? Thinking, Isn't that neat? Look at that little guy. And then he made a bluebird. And he thought, wow, that's even neater. And then a cardinal.
It's just like watching an egg hatch, you know, man.
Yeah.
Same thing, you know.
Yeah, all kinds of neat stuff. That verse in Job is about Job 30, I think. 27, maybe. Somewhere back in here. I was a little bit off. 38. Chapter 38 is where God's talking to Job, and he says to Job, you know, where were you, Job, when I built the heavens and I did this and did that? And down in verse 7 it says, when the morning stars sang together, it's talking about the angels, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. It's talking about the creation. He says to Job, where were you, Job, when all the stars, the angels sang together, and the sons of God shouted for joy. And it's all about the creation. If you start reading at the beginning, verse 38, it says, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? Job's three friends had come up with all these dumb ideas, and God said, what are these guys?
They were wanting him to curse God, weren't they?
Well, they were telling him that he had to have done something wrong. They kept telling him, confess your sin, Job, because we know you did something, because this bad's bad, never happens to anybody if they didn't. And then verse 4, God says to him, where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. In other words, he said to Job, were you around when I laid the foundations? And then he says in verse 5, who hath laid the measures thereof? If thou knowest, or who hath stretched the line upon it. In other words, God says, who decided how big it was going to be and all that. Verse 6, whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened, or who laid the cornerstone? So he said, what holds the earth, you know, and all that. And then he says, when the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy, or who shut up the sea with doors when it brake forth, as if it had issued out of the womb, then when I made the cloud the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it. And then in verse 11, he's talking to the waves. He says, and hitherto shalt thou come, but no farther, and there shall thy proud waves be stayed or stopped. So he's asking Job, where was you at when I did it all? So it's telling us that the morning, the sons of God were there, and they shouted for joy.
The morning stars sang together, and that's
stars of the angels, that's right. And then if you turn from Job over to Isaiah 66, it says, Isaiah 66 and 22 begins, God says, for as the new heavens and the new earth which I will make, there he's talking about, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. For their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. So he's telling them, I'm going to make the new heavens and new earth every Sabbath day and every new moon. They're all going to come to worship me. And they'll see the bodies for a while of the people that are being destroyed that have done these things against God. Now, let's see. There's some more right here in Isaiah. Brother, you know probably where some of them are at there, too, at the end. Let's see. Isaiah 60 has some of the stuff about the end in it. Isaiah 60 in verse 18, it says, violence shall no more be heard in thy land, wasting nor destruction within thy borders. But thou shalt call thy walls salvation, and thy gates praise. the sun shall be no more thy light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give light unto thee, but the Lord shall be unto thee as an everlasting light, and thy God thy glory. And in Revelation it says there's no need of the sun or the moon, because God is there. 21 says, thy people also shall be all righteous. In other words, no wicked, they're all righteous. They shall inherit the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. A little one shall become a thousand, and a small one a strong nation. I, the Lord, will hasten it in his time. So it says, we'll inherit the earth forever. A little one shall become a thousand, and a strong, small one a strong nation. I, the Lord, will hasten it in his time. Well, I won't really get into it, but I personally don't believe that anyone's day knows what's really going to happen in heaven. And all Jesus said was that people wouldn't be given in marriage. In other words, today someone takes their daughter and they say to them, who gives this woman to be married to this man? And the parents give their daughter to be married to that person. And in heaven there's not going to be any giving of anybody. But we don't know what God's going to do. You know, so is there a little one will become a thousand? You know, so I don't know. Well, a child, you could say. Child will become a thousand.
What's become a thousand?
Well, a thousand, you know, it could mean a thousand people. In other words, their heritage, as time goes on, their family will be a thousand people in it. And, you know, it might have a symbolic meaning, but it's, we don't really know. Don't go quote me on that, somebody will be having a fit. But honestly, they really don't know what, we don't know what's going to happen in heaven. There's only several verses that they take to try to say this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and they really don't know.
That's a good question I was asking you the other day, too, about a man and a wife getting in heaven and appearing on.
Right. See, we just don't know, you know. It says they won't be given, so a wife won't be given to a husband. But we don't know what will.
Sounds like taking one wife from here on earth with you.
Right. Let's see. I was trying to see here because it tells us somewhere right back here about planting our vineyard and no one else eating of it, building our house, and nobody else living in it. Isaiah 64 has a good verse in it. Verse 4 says, 64:4 says, for since the beginning of the world, men have not heard, nor perceived by the ear, neither hath the eye seen, O God beside thee, what he hath prepared for him that waiteth upon him. So it says no one's ever thought it, no one's ever seen it, and you can't even imagine what heaven is like. There's no way to imagine it. Let's see, I'll either find this in a second or we'll look it up in the Strong's. Okay, it's Isaiah 65 and verse 17. Hope you live right next door to me. Maybe we can live in the same house. 65:17 says, "For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind." Eventually, as time goes on, it says that the tree of life is for the healing of the nations. If one person gets there and no one else in their family makes it, at the end, right at the end, you know, you'll be sad as you think about that. But as time goes on in heaven, those wounds will all be healed, and eventually you'll never remember them again. Your mind will be healed. It says, the former things shall not be remembered nor come into your mind. So in other words, God's going to make it to where, say, my dad didn't make it to heaven. I won't think about my dad forever. I won't always be thinking, oh, I wish Dad were here. Eventually, you just won't think about it. It's going to totally heal your mind. Verse 18 says, "But be ye glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing, and her people a joy." We're going to have a lot of joy there. "And I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying." No one will ever cry again in heaven. Everything will be happiness. 20. "There shall no more thence be an infant of days, nor an old man that hath not filled his days." Of course, then they all argue about this. "For the child shall die 100 years old, but the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed." And he was just emphasizing the longevity of it. 21 says, "And they shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of the tree of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands." So there's not going to be any carpenters in heaven that go around building everybody's house. In heaven, God's going to say, okay, that's your place over there. You got this much area. Go build yourself a house. You'll build your new place, and you'll plant your vineyard there, and that's your place to be forever.
So what if you don't know how to build a house when you get?
Well, you'll have your perfect body, so you have a perfect mind, so you won't know how to do it. And it says that God's going to give us a new stone with our name written in it. And I personally think that that's the cornerstone for your new house. Just like they take the courthouse and everything, and they got that rock that's got the date and everything in it. I think when you get there, he's going to give you your new rock. And it's going to have your new name in it for your new house. And you're going to take it in there and set it, and that's going to be your cornerstone. And everybody, when they see it, they're going to know that's their house. That's Ed's place, or that's Kenny's place. That's what I believe. The cornerstone is the first stone they set on a house. It's got to be just right, hewed just right, square, level.
That's where everything above grades from.
Everything comes from there. That's right. If that cornerstone is off, it's crooked, the top of it's not flat, the whole house is in trouble. Because we don't build with stones anymore, but it's like a building a house and not getting it square. Instead of the two before being like this, it's like this. You might get by with one of them and straighten it, but it's different when you're stacking rock. It's got to be right.
Anymore, you can't buy a straight lumber anyway.
Nope, it's going downhill a lot. Verse 23 says, "They shall not labor in vain, nor bring forth for trouble, for they are the seed of the blessed of the Lord, and their offspring with them." See, here it talks about offspring. I don't know, maybe that's your little kids you take to heaven with you. 24, it says, "And it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer. And while they are yet speaking, I will hear." God knows what we're thinking. He can answer our question before we ever ask it. Look at 25, it says, this is one of my favorite ones. "The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock. And dust shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain.
So in other words, they're saying that there won't be no meat eating.
Right, everything will be vegetarian, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing's ever going to die. Sure.
I've read that before, and I'm a meat eater myself, but so I guess you just...
Well, we believe that as we get down to the end here, that the animals are getting so diseased that a person's better off if they don't eat them. And, you know, I got the mad cow thing going and everything else.
Bird flu.
And, you know, and you look at the animals today, they're sick. You know, they really are. Cancer in them and everything. And so we believe in, you know, trying to be vegetarian. And you can eat a lot of good stuff, you know. And Ed's been trying to get all converted over. He told me the other day he was going to go buy him some hamburger because he didn't have any energy. He was sure it was that. But then he cooked a pot of beans, and afterwards he had all the energy in the world.
Yeah, he was out there doing everything, lifting two heavy things.
I don't eat much meat now since I met her, but before I used to eat a lot of meat. You know,
right. Well, you know, when our country was founded, people lived on deer and all kinds of stuff that they
ate. That's my downfall. I love deer meat. You know.
But back then we had healthy stuff. Now they're even finding the deer and the antelopes that got the head disease, you know.
Lyme's disease.
Well, they got Lyme's disease, but
ticks.
They've got a lot of the antelope and stuff in Colorado, and the deer, they're telling them, do not eat them. They've got the same mad cow disease, the spongiform brain disease or whatever, they're brain wasting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've seen a program on 3ABN that they were talking about mad cow disease with the God, that book I gave you on.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about that. There's something that they find in
Creon.
I can't remember. I know
what you're talking about, too. I heard it on 30 while watching it on 31. I thought it was the same thing.
But they linked that together, and I mean, they say that's what it's doing, but they say even if you fry it, you know, it's still, it can get rid of it.
You can't kill it. They can't freeze it. That's that little thing, it's called the prion. This little tiny thing.
They said that they've cooked it at 3,000 degrees for months.
Yeah.
And if they, you don't get rid of it.
Can't kill it.
It's still there.
Freeze it to dry ice, you know, stuff to what, hundreds below. Can't kill it. It's called the prion, is what it is.
They said that they used to link Alzheimer's with aluminum.
Hello? No, we're still in here, but what's neat, I saw it was you, so I answered it.
I'm going to go along with one that gets right in the storm. I thought I would have one of those down. I thought I would have one of those down.
Yeah,
I
We probably will. We'll go park over at the car wash or something. Yeah, we're still in Mexico. Right. Thank you.
They said we're supposed to have heavy hail and everything.
Yeah, they said it was going to be a bad storm. It's coming in. Not too far from Centralia now. I'm going to go through Centralia in a little bit.
Why are we going to sit by the car wash?
Well, if I thought it was going to be baseball size hail, I'd go over and park both my cars in the car wash over there.
And
but the Pizza Hut.
We'll get beat up.
And beat up the car wash.
I've been in a hail storm. Those things hurt.
Yeah, they do.
And that's that little pretty pea size hail.
Right.
Imagine a baseball with that would be the same.
Well, it'll kill you. You don't want to get out there and you get hit with a chunk of that in the head. It'll kill you. Baseball size hail hits you in the head.
It's storming out there.
Yeah, they said it's gonna rain. So anyway, those are a lot of the verses about the heaven and the new earth. When you're having a bad day, just think about, you know, one of these days it's all going to be over with. Going to be out of here. Gonna live in the new earth. That's right, but that's why Paul said the suffering of this age is just a little bit. If we get there, when you get there to heaven, you'll think, wow, you know, I really didn't go do nothing compared to how good this is. The children of Israel, it says when they reached the promised land, and this was here on earth, the grapes were so big that two men had a big rod between their shoulders, and they carried one big clump of grapes on that rod. It took two men to haul it. And they know that the heads of wheat used to be like a foot long and 2 to 3 inches around. They know that from archaeology. Oh, yeah.
That's a big piece of wheat.
Our crops used to be so much better, and heaven's going to be so much better than what they ever were here. Can't even imagine.
Wouldn't take much to grind that up for flour.
My mom says she's going to have her a house that's all trees, so she can just walk out through there and pick the different fruit off of it. Says that the tree of life is going to have a different kind of fruit on every month. So every month when you go up to Jerusalem to worship Yahweh, you'll pick and eat a different kind of fruit. And we can't even imagine what it'll taste like. In Ezekiel and in Revelation. It's going to be amazing. We just got to hang in there and get there. Satan is trying to whip us off. He's just beating on us, beating and beating. He says, oh, these people there, they've got a taste of that, and I can't let them get it because I can't have it anymore, and I'm not sharing, letting them have it.
Do you really think that's what? Or do you think he can take, think he can have his kingdom or whatever?
Well, he's hoping, you know.
It's almost easier just to give up.
Yeah. Satan is, he has several things. Number one, the more people are lost with him, he won't have to pay for their sins in the lake of fire after Jesus puts them back on him. And I really think the biggest thing is somebody who's lost something fantastic doesn't want anybody else to have it either. And Satan cannot stand to think that we'll tread the down, walk down the street of the New Jerusalem. Just to be there, we'll just be like a bunch of little kids, just
in a candy store.
Yeah, that's right. We can't even imagine. He knows he's never going to get to go back there again. The only thing he's got coming is he's going to be outside the city and he's going to be destroyed when the fire falls. And he can't stand the thought that we could be there. Think where he fell from. Some people think today, wow, look how bad my life's gotten, look at all I've lost. But Satan used to be one of the two highest angels in heaven. He stood right there with God.
He was the third one, wasn't he?
And he's banished. And us little worm people, we have a chance to go there and be right there by the throne of God. And Satan cannot stand it. It makes him so mad that he's just furious. Infuriated by it. Valerie, do you have any more texts you want to add? Or any of the rest of you guys got one? Well, the important thing is to keep it in front of you. It's like giving kids a little goal. Tell them, you know, when you save this many dollars, you can buy yourself a go-kart. Keeps something in their mind and gives them something to work towards. And you and I got to think about heaven so we can work towards it and be thinking about it. Keep it ever in mind. Because if we keep it in mind all the time, then we're going to get there. Satan wants life to get so hard we forget about it.
Didn't Paul say that he
everything into doing that, so we got to put everything into getting ready to go. And you know what, actually, when you do what's right, life's so much happier than it was for people who are out there, you know, wandering through life. There's no joy there. You're in trouble with the law and everything.